What's up? It's your boy Tim Provise. Thank you so much for coming on through to the Provise Project. Hope you're having a good one today. On the show today, we have my good friend Optimus Dave. Optimus Dave is the head honcho, the mantis of Standing Fierce, the New Zealand fighting game community company, I suppose. I don't want to say that. But we have a good talk. Just so you know, we have cut this podcast into two parts. So this is part one. He spits a lot of just truths. There's a lot of real, like, robust conversation going on around esports in New Zealand. Hope you have a good one, and we'll catch you on for episode two next week. All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy. All right, Dave, brother, how are you?
Well, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Bro, for people that don't know you, bro, like, and don't be humble about this, okay? Please don't be humble. Jesus, because I know what you're going to do. You're going to downplay it. But who are you, bro?
The head of Standing Fierce, I guess, yeah. Guy in charge of doing fighting games.
So what is Standing Fierce, bro?
It's just a community based around competitive fighting game players. Oh, not just competitive, just fighting games in general.
And how are they different from, like, is before we get into that, bro, but, yep, like, Standing Fierce and the New Zealand FGC are kind of not the same, but they're like, what's the difference between those two?
The NZFGC is kind of like the blanket term for everybody, so that's inclusive of, like, either competitive players or casual players or even just supporters, people who just enjoy watching or just hanging out, or people who just chill in the chat, or just, you know, like, anyone who's keen to, like, it's not like a you can't join kind of thing. It's just like if you're in, you're in, kind of thing.
And what's your background, bro? Like, when did you start gaming? Cuz when was your first, like, experience?
Probably when I was like four or five. I remember my dad went and bought this because I live out in East Auckland, and ages ago, like back in the like late 80s, early 90s, there was this like gaming shop down in GI, and my dad went down and he bought this bootleg Nintendo from there. And it had all these weird games. Like, bro, it was all in Chinese, couldn't read it, but I played the shit out of them, eh? Like, did my best.
And what were some of the games on that one, bro? Did they have, like, it was Mario, but it wasn't called Mario? One of those ones?
Yeah. And they had, like, this ninja game, but I remember the pictures. I know that they had a Ninja Turtle game. It was real similar to the arcade version.
Yeah. But the Shell Shock one, where it was like, Cowabunga, that one.
Yeah. So it was that, and then from there just kind of just moved up. But yeah, went from there. I didn't have a Nintendo or a Master System, but my cousins did, and so I bodied them on their own system. Went to their house and then just sat on their game, beating them until they got off, and then I just kept going. And they had a Mega Drive 2. Shout out to Sol, because I'm Niuean, so in Niuean culture, boys have a haircutting when they turn 5 or 6, or sometimes older. And
it's the oldest one, eh? Or no?
No, it's both.
Both.
Oh, yo. Yeah. So because I had a haircutting when I was 5, but you guys will never see those pics.
Run the tape, brother. We've got the tape.
So I had a haircutting, and then from that money, we went and bought a Mega Drive 2 and Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and just a couple of other Mega Drive 2 games. And yeah, from there, just the natural evolution. Had a Nintendo 64, PlayStation, PS2. Never had a PS3. Had a 360. Kind of just, you know, I'm not real console loyalist. Just kind of go where the competition's at, really.
Oh, did you have the console version of Street Fighter?
On Mega Drive, because we went to America when we were younger. And I'm assuming it was a Walmart we were walking through, but like we walked past this like bargain bin, and bro, and we looked inside, and there was like Super Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition, Mortal Kombat 2, and Toxic Crusader, the games, bro. And they were like $5 each.
Wow. Wow.
Like
compared to like man, they were expensive over here, man.
Yeah. So so straight away, bought all four of them, brought them back to NZ, and then we ran into this problem, and it's the very first time. And then ever since then, I've always been wary of it, is region lock stuff.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that. Yeah. I was like, did it work? But it didn't work.
Nah, so we went and bought this. There's this little thing. There's this thing called a mega key. And on the back of it, it had these little switches, micro switches.
Yeah.
So then you hit the micro switches to set the mega key into like the US region. So then you put that in it, and then it converts it into New Zealand thing. Yeah.
That's crazy. Like, because but I remember they used to have that that shark cheat shark thing.
Game shark.
Yeah, Game Shark, bro. And you chuck it in, and then it'll do all the cheats for you. It's kind of like that. So you just chucked it in. Bro, that's going back, eh?
Yeah.
I remember the worst thing, bro, about playing Street Fighter on the console was the button layout.
Oh, yeah. Because
remember, like, it only had like four buttons on the Mega Drive. And then and then they came out with the actual controller that had all six of them. And then
that was the other thing too. While we were in America, like we pretty much like lucked out when we went over there, because wherever we were and whatever we were doing there at the time, and like there was six button Mega Drive controllers, and they were like maybe like 10, like it was crazy how cheap stuff was over there.
Yeah.
So we just kind of lucked out, and my mom was just like, "Oh, yeah, all good," grabbed it all, and then we came back and we were like locked in, ready to go.
Because back in the day, hey, like, man, there was so much stuff out, like peripherals for like the and like I think Victory Fist, who's another dude, he's a retro gamers, like he collects them, bro. He showed me his collection, eh? And just the types of things I didn't even know were there. Like, I knew that there was like a 32X thing, but he had like a CD version of it and all the shit. I was like, fuck, bro, it's crazy. Bro, I went to, when I was in, that's the other thing, when I was in Japan, man, in October, I was flexing on people right now. But I was in there.
Yep.
I don't know if I can do it in the suit, brother. You know, I have to return this after. I have to return this to Hallensteins once they open.
No stains, bro. You put some cardboard with armpits. Put the cardboard with armpits so the sweat doesn't go through.
Nah, bro. You put the talcum powder under there, brother. It'll be all good. But bro, like some of the shit I was saying, bro. Like I've seen. At Super Potato is what they call it. Holy shit, bro. Like, I was like, damn. And that was cheap, too. It was like, for like some of these old systems, they're like 30 New Zealand dollars, 50 New Zealand dollars. But it was the games that were like expensive. But yeah.
Nah, bro, the games
were mad expensive. Like, yeah. But, bro, what's your first, what was your first kind of like taste of like fighting games?
I always remember this. So like when I was in primary school, one of my good mates invited me over to his birthday. I think it was his sixth or seventh birthday. He lived just up the road from me, and he had older brothers and stuff. Right, and this was when Mortal Kombat 2 had just come out, and so we were there at his house having a party. And said, "Oh, let's go downstairs and play my brother's Mega Drive." And I remember we went down there. And like we played, and like obviously his brother and his brother's mates all knew, you know, everything about it, like, you know, new fatalities and all that. And I remember I jumped on and I got smashed there, and then like we all got smashed, but then everybody left and I just stayed in the room, and I was just trying to like keep playing with them, eh? Like, and then I think just from then, bro, it was just synonymous for me to like, I hate losing, and even if these guys know everything about it, I need to learn it.
Because, like, I think, like, a lot of gamers, like with consoles, like, that's where they kind of start.
Yeah.
And then, man, I reckon, like, in the 90s, eh, like, that's when arcades kind of, like, started banging, like, fucking business and shit. But, like, bro, can you remember the first time you went to an arcade or you saw, an arcade machine?
Oh, bro, I remember the very first time I would have seen one. Oh, the one that I remember is so when I was younger, like obviously being Polynesian, Sunday is always the day of the Lord. So I used to go to a church in the city. It's off K Road on Newton Street. It's called the PIC Presbyterian. It's a Presbyterian church up the road from it. Before all the it was at a weird point where like the adult stores are kind of coming in. And whatever was there was kind of phasing out. But there were these three dairies up the road from it. And I remember going to one of them and just watching these guys play Street Fighter before playing Street Fighter outside the shop in real life. But before then, it was all good. And then, like, I just remember them just, like, smashing the buttons. Like, I didn't know if they knew what they were doing, but I just remember this big machine with these buttons, and I was like, I need to, like, how do I play this?
Yo, and that was it, right?
Like, well, that was it, yeah. And, like, and that would have been when, I would have been, like, five or six. Yeah, so it was, like a long, long time ago. Like, I could, at that time, I could barely see, like, you know, see the screen, really. It wasn't until I was a bit older.
The fish and chip shops were always good, bro. Like, the fish and chip shops, the dairies. Man, I used to know, like, where all of the spots were when I was, like, 10. Especially around the hood. Like, especially around Clendon and Rewa. I was like, oh, bro, this dude's there. Bro, we had quite a lot, man. Like, I was very lucky to live in Manurewa because we had, like, three in Southmore when I was growing up. There was three, like, legit arcades that had, like, everything. So, you know, like, I was kind of exposed to, you know, like, Street Fighter, but also, like, Street Fighter the movie, like, game, all the way to that, bro.
Yeah, I was kind of like, when I think about it, I don't know how I got around so much, because obviously, like, around my area, there were dairies everywhere, and every dairy had at least one or two machines, and, you know, Street Fighter was definitely one, and then the other one would either be, like, Puzzle Bobble or Pang, you know, the one where you shoot the arrows, the drill things up to pop the bubbles?
Yeah, bro, or Bubble.
And the other one was Wonder Boy, and I can't remember what the name of it was, but there's the dude with the monkey, and you shoot the things, you know, like the guy who got a big monkey face. I can't remember what it's called, but it was always
in the chat will know.
Yeah, it's always kind of that. And then even down in GI, there was a arcade place called Space World, and there's a picture of me and my brother, like, when we were when we were younger. Like, my mom took it, and we were kind of playing arcade, and I'm playing Double Dragon, the fighting game. I don't know if anyone's so there's a fighting game of Double Dragon, and then he's playing Raiden 3, I think it is, or Raiden 2, one of the jet shooting games. So there was all of those. And then, but then, as well as that, because, like, my parents were separated, so my dad lived in Avondale, so then I would go out to Avondale every now and then there was, like, three dairies real walking distance close to his house, and one of them, and Simple know this dairy, one of them had X-Men vs. Street Fighter there for 20 cents, and that was, like, that blew my mind, because I was used to seeing it for, like, 60 cents to a dollar.
Which dairy was that, bro? Is that the one across from Avondale College or no?
No. Those two dairies had, that one had one, and then the two further down at the intersection, you know, Rosebank Road. Then those two had some. And then, the dairy I'm talking about is the Mead Street dairy. That's kind of like on the back end kind of side, but that was there. And then, you know, obviously in Avondale itself, you know, Blue Knight had all the arcade machines there. And then, I remember I was out of Mangere one time, and, like, just walking through Mangere Mall, you know, and then, like, they had the arcade on the side there.
Mangere was the mecca, bro. Obviously town was the mecca, but, like in South, like, that's where you went, like, all the time. Like, if you wanted to jam games, you got to, because in that mall they had an arcade, and then all the dairies around it had.
Yeah, it was crazy. Because the other thing too was, like, my mom used to play a lot of, like, this is heaps of, like, history and stuff. I don't know if it's a bit much. I just need to reel me in if I'm going too far. But, like,
I don't care. I'm not going to reel you in. I'm just going to keep feeding the beast.
My mom used to play a lot of, like, you know, back in the day, like, you know, communities, like, especially, like, minority communities, you know, you always did stuff as a community. So she was part of the Kilikiti team, which is island cricket, for those in the chat that don't know what that is. And they used to play around Auckland. I think that's how I got around so much. So they'd play at the Greyland Park, and they're playing out Mangere, you know, the big field across the road from the communities, from the town centre. So they'd play there. They'd play at the Avondale Racecourse, and they would play at there's one more. So it's Greenland. I remember there were four spots, but they, like, pretty much wherever the cricket was, we would go, and I would not play just cricket. Just go hood rat it around at the dairies, play some games. I just kind of been everywhere, really.
Man, my, like, and I know this interview is not about me, but, like, what I used to do is my cousin, he was like 15 and I was like six. Yeah. And he was getting in trouble down in Taranaki, and he got sent up to come live with us. This cat, I don't know how he did it. he stole the arcade machine from the dairy. this is what happened, bro. Yeah. I was like at home, and I was like six. This is how I remember. I was six, and then I look out the. I was like, man, where's Jason at? And then my mom was like, man, go outside and go see if you can find Jason. And we lived at the bottom of this hill, right? And bro, this cat had it on the skateboard, bro. holding it, bro, hugging the shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then like just the skateboard, like trying to like slow, and he was in like jandals, bro, like clap, 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 trying to slow it down.
Yeah.
And bro, he was like, "Oi, Tim, go get the garage keys, open it up." And yeah, he got snapped. Like, we played it all night, and then the next day the police come and picked it up and picked him up too. And I was like, fuck. But anyway, that was my very first.
Right, that's me.
Fuck, bro. I always remember it. And it was Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was the OG one. And I was just like, bro, I stayed up all night playing it.
Yeah.
And we just kept putting 20 cents in it, like, all the time. And like, it was the best, bro. And like, he popped open the thing. Fuck, it was funny, bro. Anyway, but so what about e-funds, bro? How often, when did that come into the equation?
E-funds came in later on. So when I was about in college, and I thought I was the man at Tekken 3, obviously at home, you know, sitting at home, I was like, fuck yeah, I'm untouchable, bro. Let's go. Went into the city, seen e-funds. I was like, oh, what's this place? Rolled down and I saw Tekken 3 up on the arcade machine. I didn't realize that they had back-to-back, head-to-head setups. So I just jumped on one side, hopped in, chucked my money in, bro, and got smoked. And I was like, damn, this computer's hard. And I played again, smoked again. And then I had a look on the other side, and then I seen this dude play, and I was like, hey. Had a look on this, and then I just looked at his thing, and I was like, oh, two wins. And then I was like, oh, fuck, he just dazzed me. And then from there, Yifan's was like pretty much my second home, really. Yeah. Just where I'd just go down after school. During school.
Bro, what school did you go to then?
Selwyn College.
Oh, yo, that's like not even, that's like a half a bus ride. You'll be sweet.
Yeah, it's all good, yeah. That's right. Yeah, so that's like, that was only like, back then, it was only like $2 to get into the city.
Oh. Because so, I was out south, bro. So like getting on the bus from our ways there was like, bro, it was like a day trip. Like
yeah, we
Man, we made that shit every like second. when mum's doll would come in, bro, she'd be like, "Here's $10." I'll be like, "Yo," and that place was legendary. For anybody that's from Auckland that knows about e-funds, like that place was really ahead of its time in terms of like games.
Yeah, definitely, and that was one of the best things about e-funds because a lot of the guys that I met down there, international students who'd come over from like China, Hong Kong, Japan, like they would rate e-funds really highly because a lot of them would say like they just remark on how clean it was. You know, like that's the biggest thing. They'd be like, it's clean. There's lots of lighting. There's never any like shady like people down there. And so they always kind of opened my eyes at how lucky we were to have such a place. And they were always up to date with majority of the games.
Yeah, it was crazy how they got them in. I don't know how they fucking sorted it out, like especially in those times.
Yeah,
there was no internet. Like,
yeah, I don't. And those machines weren't small; they were massive. So
yeah,
they had their bro. Whoever the plug was, man, he was hooking it up real good for them.
Bro, we need to figure out who this guy is.
Yeah.
I know that Will's probably got the plug somewhere, but like ask him questions because that man, it was crazy.
Yeah,
I used to, man. And then was there any other places that you were like, yo, that's the place to? So E-Funds was the jam, but where were the other places?
This might be showing my age, but you know, down at the bottom of Queen Street, they used to have the original time zone down by that's bread of mine now, but it used to be the bus depot.
Yep.
And then down the bottom there, they used to have two. Used to have time zone on one side, and then just a like a three-story arcade on the other side. You could go all the way up. It was like heaps of kit. And then the third story, I think, was pool tables. And then as the arcade like scene was dying, then they opened that time zone on Queen Street, on Queen Street. And I used to go there heaps. Obviously, the Burger King timeout underneath. It's not even called timeout anymore. See, that's how old it is. So yeah, Time Zone under the Burger King, Games Paradise, which used to be kind of across the road. It's where JB Hi-Fi is now. That used to be an arcade.
Yep, that's what I remember.
Yeah, and then if you go up a bit more, there was a place called Scent City, and it used to have, it was kind of directly across from, oh, what's there now? Oh, that churro place and stuff, that's all up there now.
From IMAX.
So I used to go there a lot. Obviously, IMAX, when they used to have like a proper arcade thing before it just became all like redemption games and stuff, like ticket games and stuff like that. So yeah, it was kind of like all over the place. But then even then, I used to go to, before they all closed down, I used to go to the arcade in Otahu by the bus stop, like the bus terminal.
Otahu terminal used to be the, like, that's where everybody would stop and order, like, you know, to,
yeah, bro,
go from there to the city.
Yeah, yeah, because that was like the middle ground, because there was like no, you know, like there was no intermediate stops. There was no Sylvia Park. There was no Pamua bus station thing. You know, it was like you go from GI to Pamua to Otahu, and that's it.
And then, crazy, bro. Like when you used to stop in there, bro, and look out and see all the like crackheads and stuff.
Oh yeah, that was, yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, is going on here?
I still remember one, like when I was at the. Did you ever play that one at Otahu and they had the Scorpion and the Sub-Zero?
I'm painted on the wall. Yeah,
yeah. Right, that's all. Yeah, I remember I was there playing one time, and then, bro, all of a sudden, these like 10 dudes rushed in and started beating up this dude who was playing X-Men, I think. I don't know what it was about, but like, there's these two dudes playing, and then these 10 dudes just come in and start beating up this one dude, and the guy who's playing, the guy getting beaten up, just like keeps playing the game. this dude's getting straight fucking bodied right next to me. He's just like totally ignoring it. Just keeps,
fucking seconds.
I always remember that, eh? But you know what's real funny is like the room was full of people playing games. Those dudes came rushing in, and like nobody, like it was like as if it was just a normal everyday thing.
That was the thing, though, bro. I saw heaps of shit go down at the arcades, bro, in terms of like fights and stuff.
Yeah,
like it was serious shit, man. Like, because where my school was, there was three arcades in walking distance. Like, I was at Rewa Central.
Like
on the main drag, so there was like Technodrome and there was two other ones. And anyway, like I used to go like walk home so I could use my bus money just to jam the games.
Yeah,
and then I used to like hustle dudes, like, oh yo bro, like, you know, got 20 cents, bro. I got to get home. All those ones. But the main thing was like there was people like seriously just having a scrap. I remember like I was a little like 8-year-old and I beat this cat at Street Fighter. And he was like serious, like, fuck you, little shit. And I'm like, oh, damn. But I used to get serious.
Right, yeah. There's like heaps of stuff. There's either that. There's either the old guys bullying the little guys, or like, and then the little guys would, you know, if they get bullied, they'll go and turn the machine off and run away. Right, that was that was a turn it off and run away and not come back until the next day. There's heaps of stuff. There are free some machine. One, yeah.
Or it's those fellas that just trying to fucking stand you over for 20 cents.
Oh,
like, ah, shit.
The old pocket tap, eh? We got any spare change? Nah, I got nothing. And then tap your pockets, eh? And then, oh, what's that? I don't know where it came from. Oh, here you go.
But do you reckon that consoles killed that? Do you reckon it was the main thing?
I think it was more so the internet, really, as opposed, like there are still consoles, but, you know, people still went over to people's houses and stuff to play. But with the internet, just kind of like, you don't even need to leave the house. Like, in an ideal world, the net code would hold up and that would be all good. But you still need, I think, for fighting games in particular, you still need that offline appeal. But yeah, definitely the internet more so than consoles.
Yeah, because it, I mean, it started changing, what, like, when like 97, 98 to 2000s, they kind of slowly kind of died out. And then, you know, that's kind of around the time when the internet was getting bigger and, you know, the consoles were getting a little bit more advanced and netcode was coming out. So, yeah, it's always like, that's what I kind of like hate about like kids growing up these days. They don't understand, bro, how hard it was like to stay on a machine for like, as long as you can.
Nah, I know what you mean.
20 cents.
Bro, you got your $1 and you're already. And that's what I used to do, is that, you know, I'd take $2 coin and then I'd divide it in my head. I'd be like, sweet, this is 10 20-cent pieces. Yeah, like.
That's
so,
math for you, bro.
Bro, there's math. And then you have to work out. I have to be here from 12 until 2. So that means that's 2 hours. So I have to divide these coins up into minute intervals, you know? And then if you fuck it up and you, like, if you spend 3 coins within half an hour, bro, you're fucked for the rest of the day because now you got to wait.
Yeah. And Pino said exactly, yeah, you got to hold that hour, bro.
Yeah.
Like, fuck, if you get bodied and then that's it, like, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And everybody's looking and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, you got to, like, it's out of it because, like, the community is a bit different, you know? But I think that's just, like, a generational thing.
Yeah, I think you're onto it too, bro. Like, that's exactly what it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, bro. So let's get into Standing Fierce, bro. How did you get let's go through the history of it. I know that there was NZism. That's when I kind of first had you guys on my, like, radar of knowing what the fuck's going on.
Yeah. But
where did it really start, bro? And who started it?
So NZism is actually, I think, like in my opinion, that is the start of the New Zealand fighting game community just finally having a spot to meet really online, you know. I know a lot of guys would go on SIK.com, which is Shuriken.com, which is the original big fighting game website. And NZism was created by a guy from Hamilton. His idea was Flux Core. I won't give out his real name because I know he's,
that fuck, yeah. Bro. That dude was like, I remember that dude in the forums. He was like next level.
Yeah. So he used to. So he's the guy who put it all together, and So you can say that the birth of the NZFGC comes from Hamilton. So you always got to put some respect on Hamilton's name for that. So I found a forum and I just invited my friends, and then slowly from there, because there was a lull between, like, I don't know, 2002 till 2008 when there was no real big fighting game release, and then 2008 saw Street Fighter 4 pop off, and then everyone was online, and then I guess people playing each other online would be like, oh, are you from NZ? Yeah, go to this website. And then it just steamrolled from there.
You reckon Street Fighter 4 was the one, like, the kind of, like, bringing in of, like, serious gaming?
Nah, definitely. Like, it was a catalyst games? Yeah, it was a catalyst for where fighting games are today, in my opinion, like, competitively. The combination of the IP, which, you know, everybody knows Street Fighter, and then the online, which at the time, you know, it was one of those. It's in that group of games that really pushed the online at the start, which was, like, you know, you have your Halo, you know, like, people love Halo online. That's, like, you know, and then the original CODs, you know, then you have Street Fighter 4. Like, and then, like, you could even put that with Counter-Strike and Warcraft 3 and Starcraft, you know, like, that it's that, like, kind of early generation of online game, which just blew up and then showed everybody, like, oh, there's, like, more to this than just playing Bro Down the Road.
Yeah, because that was really kind of, like, for me, bro, that's when I, and even online, like, there was a lot of content and people to watch, like, you know, like, once, Gutex kind of, like, was like, yo, this is what's happening, and then him and Mike Ross and stuff, and then they made that is it Focus, that documentary?
Oh, the Mike Ross one?
Yeah. Oh, the Focus was the one where it was like Gutex, I think it was the one. It was the Gutex and Justin Wong, and they had all that. Focus?
I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, and it was when, like, Gutex was, like, bodying everyone with Saget, and then, like, it was like, whoa, shit, like, fuck. Yeah, that was my first kind of, like, fuck, actually, I might get into this shit, eh?
Yeah.
And then just started to play, but, I mean, yeah. But so from that, bro, from that blow up, what put you into the position to be into where you are right now, like,
running everything? Oh, so, like, yeah, so after finding that, and then like, meeting everybody, and then, you know, we all became like a nice little group, like, you know, it's community of players, like, it was quite small, quite tight knit, and then some of the guys on the NZism, you know, wanted to create a new site, kind of like Event Hubs. So if people who don't play fighting games don't know, Event Hubs is like I guess, the TMZ of fighting games, but not as bad, not as like cringy as them. But they have like a lot of, you know, a lot of news, a lot of tidbits, a lot of game information and just what's going on in the fighting game world. So they wanted to do that. And then I don't know the full history about what happened in the background between those guys and Flux Core, but there was a bit of a disagreement. Yeah. And then they didn't really get to, I don't know. It's not my place to speak on it because I don't really know the full story. So that's maybe something you can touch on later.
Yeah,
with your journalistic skills there.
Have you seen the suit, bro?
I love the tie. Yeah, I love the tie,
bro. It's floral patterns, dude.
The tie matches the beard perfectly.
I'm bringing the island flavor, dude. I was actually gonna wear my island attire, bro.
Oh, wow.
I was gonna switch it up, but then I was like, no, you know what? Actually, Dave deserves this treatment too.
You know? Thank you. Now I feel totally underdressed, but
it's fine, brother. It's fine.
Yes.
This is a one-man show right now, brother. Yeah. But so and then you were just like, you just picked up the ball and was like, okay, yeah, fuck, I'll do this then.
Yeah. So yeah, and then after all that happened, there was a scene, there was a community, there's like events like there. And then it just all stopped, and I was loving it, bro. This was like my dream come true, you know. I was like, damn, there's like a scene here. There's people playing, you know. Like in my head, I saw it like getting huge, getting it as big as like the American scene. And I was like, bro, because the guys in charge, you know, they were all, you know, very well educated. They knew what they were doing. Like everything was like all good, and then they just stopped. And then I was just like, damn. And I felt bad for all the players who were way better than me, because I felt like their skill was going to waste, you know, like how can you be so good at something, but you're just cut down because there's no scene for you. So I was just like, oh, I'm not that good anyway. So I'll just, you know, run something now until someone else comes along and takes over. You know, I was just like, there's probably like 100 other people who are way more qualified and skilled than what I can do for this community. So I'll just run it and wait for someone to take over. And then eventually everyone was just like, nah, you're in charge now. And then it just kind of just stuck. So here I am.
And you are. And like, it's kind of like just like somebody had to do something. And there's a saying that goes, bro, you're either part of the problem or part of the solution, right?
Yeah.
And I think you kind of like, were like, bro, I'd rather be part of the solution than sit back and just moan about shit. Like, right?
Yeah.
It was
more so the fact that like I saw everyone like asking for things, you know, like when's the next thing, and then I, you know, I asked the guys directly who were running who originally started it, and they were like, nah, this we got nothing else. So I was just like, oh, is it all right if I do something? And then they're like, yeah, go for it, it's just yours now. So I was like, oh, sweet. Yo. All right,
what made a change from, were you part of the process with changing it from NZism to like Standing Fierce?
Nah. I was just the player, just enjoying being a competitive player for once, you know.
Because whoever came up with that name is fucking genius, yo.
Yeah. Oh, I know. So the guys who did come up with that, Lenny Saurus is his name. Him.
Yeah, I remember his tattoo, yo. Yeah, he's the man.
Yeah. Yeah, he's still, bro. He's still beast at fighting games. He's just.
Does he still participate?
Nah. He's got a real important job at the moment. I won't say what he does, but he handles a lot of money for a certainly really humongous company in NZ.
Bro, you just mentioned it. You said, I don't want to mention it. And then you just said what he does. Hey, I don't want to mention it, but, you know, he killed a couple of people.
I was just trying to be subtle in there. Yeah.
I don't want to mention it, but, you know, he works for the NZ.
So he's way too busy to compete regularly. But we still hang out sometimes, and we still play online a bit. So him and his friend, who was a marketer, they kind of sat down and like a real big brainstorming session on, you know, like SEO stuff, and they looked up what names have already been used, what words or phrases associate with fighting games, what words and phrases associate strongly within New Zealand culture, you know. So like they kind of came down to the idea of like, you know, New Zealanders are fierce and we do stand fierce all the time, You know, like it goes even further back to like, you know, Maori culture. When you do a haka, you're standing fierce, you know, like there's a lot of meaning to it. So it's why I thought it's cool. I've never really like explained that much to it, but like, cause I remember I had a big conversation to him about it as well. And he explained all that stuff to me and I was like, man, that's cool. That's so cool. But you know, like I don't like saying that stuff cause I like people to come up with their, you know, their own meanings for it.
You're hitting them with that Drake lyric, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Where it means something, but it doesn't mean something, but it kind of does. And yeah. It has like a double entendre. You know, we speak in big words here at the podcast, brother. Journalists.
Yeah, journalism.
Nah, bro, like, it's that. It's fucking great, bro. Like, I'm not a marketer, but coming from the outside looking in, it's like, and then on top of all that, it's like the name of like, the hardest punch that you have in Street Fighter. It's like, oh, this is fucking great. It's what a great idea. Mm. Yeah. So nah, man. Yeah. Open to interpretation. That's what it's called. Yeah.
That's the one. That's the one, bro. That's the one.
Yeah. So good. And man, I wear my brand. I wear my merch all the time with my Standing Fierce merch all the time. And it's cool because people don't know if it's a gaming brand or not, or they're just like, oh, Standing Fierce, bro. That's mean. And it kind of gets that like market as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right. It's crazy, bro. But and then so like so from there, like let's go from like, you know, humble beginnings, I suppose, and just growing organically, because it's a really an organic story of how something's growing. Like there was no real budgets or nothing that went there. I think the way that Standing Fierce has, if there was a game that came or an esport kind of organization that came out and want to have a look at, you know, the perfect, I don't want to say end game because you guys are still evolving, but the perfect kind of pathway, I think your guys' one is like, fuck, what more could you have asked for? You have a very solid community. You have a very solid upbringing. Your mission statement is just to bring more players in and make people feel welcome, and that's really cool. But cheers. But in terms of running things day to day, what does that look like for you, bro?
So with Rambat and stuff, now I have a way better system. When I started, I was pretty terrible at it. I used to run it like week by week, but nowadays I plan at least 2 months in advance. So all Rambats have already been like, you know, planned out, and the assets and things are all ready to go. It's hard to explain because I've been doing it for so long, it just feels like, you know, like normal part of my day. But I spend maybe like three to four hours every day just on maintaining just Standing Fierce like socials and just keeping up with like partners and a whole bunch of stuff. I've never really like written down everything that I do.
what is the biggest, like, for you, bro? What's the biggest, like, so if we're talking priority wise, where is your priority? Or like, you've got a tournament coming up, bro. Where is the most effort spent?
Probably securing a venue with good internet. So just venue. Yeah. So that would be number one. And then number two would be working out the budget so that we cover the costs, but it's not heavy on the player's wallet. You know, like, because one of the things I always do is whenever I like, so anything that we put up on the site that's like, if whether it's our merch or if it's tournament entry fees, I always say to myself, would I pay that? And then if there's ever any hesitation where I have to think about it, then I already know that it's a no.
So
as soon as we do something, once the venue's been found and we work out the cost for it, I'm like, oh, I wouldn't pay that. And then I just keep going down until it's like a point where I'm like, oh, that's all right. And then if it covers, you know, and then I try and keep it within that region.
And then, because, I mean, you're a player, or not now, or you used to be a player. Do you still play? You still giving that shit?
Yeah, every now and then. I try and play every now and then, but... No, I'm not as good as I used to be.
Yeah. Don't be you know, I watch, bro. I watch from afar. But I mean, like, you have empathy because that was you like 4 or 5 years ago, 3 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long has Standing Fierce been going?
Standing Fierce has been going for 10 years this year, but I've only been doing it for 8 years, I think. Where's my maths right? Yeah.
Are you it's hard because you guys are in your own space in terms of like esports, you know what I'm saying? I can't say, are you the longest reigning such and such, because I don't know who is or who is close. But in my mind, being a Street Fighter, being an old head, like a arcade cat,
you guys
were the only ones that I knew. Like,
yeah.
Like I didn't know, because I mean, Rocket League is new. Yeah. Overwatch is new.
Yeah.
All these, like League of Legends is not new, but it's newer. It's not as new as those other ones, but Street Fighter's been around since I was a kid. So that's how I associate you guys with, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I wouldn't say longest running, because as I matured as a person in charge, and I don't know what the proper term would be, but I started to normally when you start things, you have your blinkers on and all you're about is that thing that you're about. And then as we moved on, I started looking into other genre of games. So back then there was AVT, Adversity Gaming. So they were mainly Halo, and then they had a bit of COD in there as well. And then obviously, you know, there were the X-Lands before that. Ping Zero is another one that's been going. I think they might be the longest currently. I think they're at Ping Zero 50 something. And that's like, I think they used to do two per year. So, you know, it's like 20 years, I think, if my maths is not terrible. Don't quote me on that. But Ping Zero have been going for a long time. Who else?
Like, bro, you remember those Black Box sessions?
Yeah. And I was about to say the BBS sessions.
Fuck.
That's even further back. You know, those things are all happening independently of themselves. You know, like there was no real. I don't know if there was any real group conversation or anything, but from the outside, it looked like, you know, they were just kind of all doing their own thing, because there was no, I guess there was no easy way to, you know, outside of going there and getting someone's phone number and calling them up, you know, because there was no, like, there were like early message boards and stuff like that. But
that's really where everything happened, right? Was in those forum boards, the Game Planet ones, fucking button mashers and NZism, those ones. That's
what
all kind of happened.
So that is, you know, like, so I wouldn't say longest running. I would just say I guess for us is just because we do so many offline events, but that's just the nature of the game, of our game really. So I think it would seem like we've been around for longer, but I'm sure, you know. And then it doesn't take into account how, you know, all the Counter-Strike tournaments that happened way before we were there, you know, and like, you know, and the Warcraft 3, like all that stuff, so I wouldn't really say longest running. I'd say maybe current, most consistent.
And organized, I think. Like, you're actually an organized, you're an organization, like, you know what I mean? Like, everything is organized and still going. Like, that's what I kind of, for me, that's what makes you guys the OGs. It's like, you guys kept it going. People, there's still a need for it, and fighting games got bigger and bigger, just as you guys did. And then so that's what I really wanted to kind of, what I reckon. What are you doing in the background there, bro?
Oh, sorry.
Tell me you're pissing, bro.
No, just throw me a drink of water. Throw me a drink of water.
Bruv, I was like, damn, this guy's comfortable. Let's go.
This whole time I've been in the toilet. I'm drinking.
So, so you said finding the venue is the biggest thing. Once you found that venue, bro, what comes next?
After that, then we, once the venue is sorted, then we work out what games we're going to play. We always go with, there's always four games that are the most popular, and currently, you know, it's like the Street Fighter, Tekken, Smash Brothers, and Soul Calibur at the moment. But then there are also like the kind of smaller games. Like, I've always been a Marvel versus Capcom like fan since forever, so that game is always in there because that's my one little, like, you know, like, I'm in charge, so that's always going to be there kind of thing, you know. Like, and that's why I always say, like, if people want to run something with their game, then do it, you know. Like, if you want your game to be there, just put your hand up and say, I want it to be there, bro. It's in. So we work out the games, and then from there we work out how many setups we'd need. So then we work out how many setups we need, how many we have, and then from there we work out the schedule. And from the schedule, we work out stream stations, who's streaming. Shout out to Tim for hooking it up on the stream station last year at Nationals. Thank you
for like 15 minutes. But, I didn't deserve a shout out.
Nah, it's all good, man. But hey, if you've
ever... I don't know what your trick was, too. You wanted me to be there, okay, just so I see. And I fucking saw. I saw the light, brother.
A lot of people don't realize driving the stream is a lot of... You got to keep the names updated. Hey, who's that guy? Who's that guy? Oh, who are these guys commentating? Oh, then you got to watch the game. It's like, oh, is it the end of the game? Oh no, it's not the end yet, you know, like, so it's hard, man. So you know, I appreciate that.
For my 15 minutes of you know, like, I didn't even get anything. I didn't get a free... oh no, actually that's a lie, I got a drink. I got some Red Bull. You hooked me up, so fuck, apologies for that. I'm very thankful for the Red Bull. Unlimited too, bro. You're like, you want another one?
Work experience.
I'm trying to come up in the game, bro. I want to be the next commentator, bro.
Yeah, man, bro. Hey, just pick a game and just learn the rules.
Bro, you tell me, brother. You guys, hey, can you go off there? And I'll give you that chair moldy. Oh, yeah. Fuck. Second one out. No, it will ruin your fucking, your thing. But, so, like, what else? What are some things with, like, running a tournament? What are some obstacles that you run into, bro? Obviously, venue and internet, but any other thing?
I guess... like it's a weird one, but it's like acceptance from the venue, you know, like when you explain it to them what it is, they kind of like don't really understand. And then you know, when they ask for a floor plan, you send it in and they don't understand why X amount of tables are needed, but you know, there's like four times that many chairs needed. And then I think a lot of them kind of don't really get the esports thing yet, which is fair enough, you know. It's still kind of young. So there's that. And then the next part would be sponsors, like you know, like kind of like New Zealand's kind of small, so everyone knows it's small, and like on the grand scheme of things, so it's hard to you know, get things from sponsors to help us with events. Like getting products, that's cool, like, you know, that's all good, but a lot of players most of the time would sell off the products that they win, you know, so like monitors and that, like I'm not saying like thanks, you know, like not being ungrateful or anything, but like if there was a conversation with like the whoever, you know, in certain like sponsored companies and stuff, where I can say we actually need these things more than those things, you know, it would just make sense. So like that's a real big obstacle, just getting... because like most of the time when I contact companies, like they're, you know, the first line of like the, it was like either the HR person or the, not HR, sorry, the PR person or the salesperson, they're on board, you know, they're all good. It's when it goes to the next step, you know, to their manager or their manager's manager to get the final sign off. And then somewhere along the way, you know, a few things fall off the list, and then, oh, it gets to the end and it's only, you know, one thing. Yeah, like, but we've already, you know, and then by that time we've already committed to, you know, pushing them on our socials. You know, we've got them on, or you know, across Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and then we've chucked, you know, their logos and stuff on all the tournament branding. You know, and then by then it's like, oh, I mean, all this effort, and they only give us this, like, you know, again, it's not to sound ungrateful, but there has to be like, you know, more, you know, more give and take, but you know, to create a proper relationship. But that's just something, you know, like, you just got to work on. And like, I, one of the things, I guess that's all right though, because whenever people do say no to me about things, I'm just like, eh, all good, because I'm so used to just doing it out of my own pocket anyway.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to like hit you up about, like financially.
Yeah.
Like, how does that all work, bro? Because I know that you, like, I know how cheap it is to jump into one of your tournaments. It's not like, it's not a lot of money, and it's very reasonable. But yeah. I know how much venues cost, and I know how much internet costs, and I know, you know, and I know that you get all your setups from your community, which is fucking mean. Mm. But bro, where does all this, like, who, like, what's happening in terms of like, how do you pay for this shit?
So all the money that we get from Rambats, we save most of it and just kind of funnel that back to our fund for nationals, which is at, you know, always in October. And then as well as that, we include like merch sales as well. So that all that stuff kind of helps us get by. But really, it's real close a lot of the times. You know, like we're either like a little bit over or just or a little bit under, which yeah. we prefer. But it's always real tight.
In terms of like, what's the biggest expense, bro, for your overheads? Like, what's the thing that costs the most? Is it venue?
Yeah, the venue by far.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just then, and then after
you guys are going around, like you guys are at like out. Central, you're out south, you're out everywhere, yeah. you're like west, like yeah, yeah. So is that like the biggest kind of obstacle?
Yeah, the venue is hard because Auckland is just so expensive, you know, like just in general Auckland's expensive. So then obviously that cost is brought on over when you're trying to hire a venue. And then another thing to take into account is that during winter, you know, prices go up because it's like ball season or, you know, winter yeah. festival season. So yeah, so the price of venues go even higher, and then even then you have to pick your dates because you have to, you know, you have to dance around all the winter formals, winter, like, you know, school balls, and then there's the, you know, all the uni formals that they have, and then there's, you know, big businesses throwing their like galas and all that, you know. So we kind of got to dance around all that, and then we have to take into account what big events are happening in the city at the time. You know, is there a rugby game? Is there a league game? You know, is there a concert? What concert's on? You know, and then from there you kind of work out what part of Auckland is going to be busy, and so then these hotels will be no-goes because they'll be fully booked out, but these ones a bit further away. But then that hotel might not have good internet, or their venue might, you know, their ballroom might be tiny. You know, like there's a lot of research
has to go into account. Like, you would be a bad tournament organizer if you didn't think about these things. You know?
Yeah. So that's it. And then another thing too, which is like real big, is like power outlets. You know, like a lot of ballrooms don't have that. Yeah, like so.
Amy just brought that up earlier. Yeah, power outlets. Yeah. It's not enough because.
Oh, bro, that is honestly that. You know, like when you go in there and they're like, yeah, this is the room, blah 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 blah, and then you look and you're like, oh, where are the power outlets? And they're like, oh, we got four at the front and four at the back. And it's like, oh, I mean
so, you know, like, you know, middle. AUT, was it AUT where you guys were?
Yeah.
Is that like ideal in terms of, you know, because they've got a lot of power outlets, right? Because
yeah, the venue was cool. The venue was real cool. Like, the room was big. Like, the other thing too is like, because the community has been growing so much, the when I book a venue for an event, by the time it gets to the date of the event, our community has overgrown the, you know, the initial size of what I book for. So that's why we have been moving around quite a bit,
bro. Like, just to be honest, yo, that shit was hot as fuck, yo.
Yeah,
and it was smelly. There's some people that ain't using that. Bro,
that is the ongoing battle, eh? We're maybe like one step away from just having like a refresh station, you know, like some like deodorant, like some wet wipes, you know, just
sell them.
Yeah, bro, just something, just something, just to give people, like, you know, like, just refresh yourself, bro. You know, like,
someone gives you that red card, Gene.
It's just like, you know, take a little bit of pride in yourself, you know, presentation. Yeah. It's all like, you don't have to like have a haircut and all that. You know, you don't gotta fucking spray up the fucking storm with your Lynx Africa or anything. But just, I mean, you know,
bro, don't be hating on Lynx Africa, bro. Do you know my win loss record with that shit, brother? It's illustrious.
Mine was always the graphite, the purple one.
Mine was the brute, bro, the green one.
Yeah. Bro, mix that with a little bit of CK1, oh brother.
Get in me, brother. Nah, not the CK1, bro, the cheap one, the bootleg one from the warehouse.
From the warehouse, bro, same bottle, different level, just ripped the bottle off.
Bro, Lynx Africa is the go-to, bro. I'm telling you.
But yeah.
Whenever I went to the movies at Monaco, also. The arcade that was across the road from the Monaco movies where the Georgie Play used to be, that went off too. But that was the first ever sports or cafe, internet cafe I ever saw. Like, it was true.
Yeah.
But bro, that was the go-to. But fuck, bro, whenever you walked into the movies, bro, that was all you smelt. yeah. was that Lynx Africa. All these, young bucks.
Even on the bus, where the after school bus.
Fuck. Oh, bro, yes, yes. But so like getting back onto it. Yeah. So like that's really financially, that's where a bulk of the money goes to.
Yeah, yeah, but like I'd say like 70% of it goes to venue.
Where's the other stuff go to?
So then the rest of it goes to covering so like the lanyards that we get printed and the passes. And then paying for the internet, and then like little things that you wouldn't really think would cost a lot, but it's quite expensive, like duct tape. That's just fucking expensive.
Oh, bro, yeah, of course, because you got to do the cords.
Yeah, yeah, because we tape down all the cords and stuff, and like fire. That's fucking honestly, bro. I didn't understand why duct tape was so expensive, but that's just one of those things.
Well, I suppose it's like fire hazard wise, right? So you have to do
Definitely, yeah. And then we have the trophy. We got to pay for the trophies to get made, and then we pay for the t-shirts, the merchandise. You know, the screen printing and the t-shirts
That's expensive too. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So pretty much all the money goes on everything that you see at the tournament. That's all been paid for by the community. You know, like their entry fee has helped it. Obviously. Like myself and my brother and some of the other guys in the community, like supplement that on top with our own money. So Sol, who controls the stream, like a lot of this, pretty much majority of the stream gear he's bought himself, like the mixer, the headsets, all the audio converters and all of that. So all that stuff, the cameras he bought out of his own pocket too that we use, the HD cameras. So like some of those costs where we can't just, where it's hard for us to, you know, put it across to the community.
Yeah,
I think it's just how we are in general. You know, like it's kind of hard for us to like ask like, oh, can you guys help us with this thing? We're just more so like, oh, if we can do it, then we'll just do it ourselves.
Yeah. But yeah, bro. I look at like you and your how you've grown this thing, eh? Mm. And a lot of people think, oh, there's heaps of people. Like, oh man.
Yeah.
But the more people you have, bro, the more like more money, more problems, brother. Real talk. Like
nah,
the more
definite.
You know, because there's more people in there. That means there's more. You need more internet, or you need more this, you need more that. A lot of people think, oh man, he's got like 300 people coming, but it's not like it doesn't make anything easier.
Nah, it makes it because then there's way more. Then there are a lot more independent moving parts that I have to kind of be aware of. You know, and then there are some things where I don't even realize until someone brings it up, you know, just like not complain, like they wouldn't be complaining about it. They'll just, you know, it'll be like an offhand remark. And then I'll be like, oh man, I didn't even think, you know, like, and then it just like, and then it clicks and then everything else clicks. And I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Yeah. Like I feel real bad when I don't cover all the angles.
But I think like, you know, I'm putting my psychologist hat on right now. I don't know if you know that about me, but this suit also is a psychologist suit. Okay. But I think this is how you become so successful, bro, is because you kind of rule it. You rule the roost. Like there's two ways to rule shit, right? There's fear and there's respect. Okay. And a lot of people think, I'm scared of fucking such and such. He's going to tell me off, but you don't do that. And that's, and because you have a critical mindset on and you're thinking, fuck, how can I make this better? As opposed to, fuck you, listen to what I say.
Yeah.
That's why it's so like, that's why you've grown so much, I reckon. That's my perspective on it.
I guess so.
Don't be humble. Don't be humble, dude. Be like, me. You're either Cersei, bro. You're either Cersei or you're fucking Daenerys, brother. Okay? And nah, you're Daenerys to me. Queen to me, brother.
Well, hey, keep those eyes to yourself, eh?
Hey, you know my missus in a way, eh?
Good choice, brother.
You might be related to you.
Good choice,
by
brother.
Marriage. Okay? Call me Timmy Nui right there, brother. Optimus Timmy Nui.
Yeah, bro. That's the one.
Fucking love my Lahiatu, brother. Oh,
You got it, bro.
I got the shit, bro. Fucking hell. Hey, anyway. She's probably listening like, who the fuck does this guy think he is? But no, bro, I got some questions from the community, bro. Now, I got to give, and this is the second time I've given Milky a shout out on my stream. Okay.
Yeah.
Milky, I love her Twitter. I love her Twitter. Her Twitter is next level. Okay. But anyway, she says, what are the next steps you think in needing to take to grow the community at the moment, not just by yourself, but the community as a whole? And what is the next dream for the FGC? So we'll break that into two parts. So what growing wise, what's being taken to grow, to be ready for the growth?
Well, since we started doing the online rambats, I see that we've been able to pick up a lot more of the online only players. So since that's like kind of an avenue that I haven't really, like, I've just kind of half-assed it with the online stuff because I just know that people playing will come anyway. But now that I see that there's like a bigger audience, I'm just going to put more time into organizing more online stuff specifically for online players, because eventually, you know, like, I think one of the big things is building trust within your audience or your community or, you know, whoever you're trying to just connect with. So just building that trust for them to understand that, you know, like, I'm down for what they want to do. So it's just building connections. It just takes time, like time spent building. So the online community is massive, and that's one of the bigger communities to tap into now. And just to get them to come out more, you know, like not to come out and like, you know, not like come out and like give me your money and all that. It's just like come out and come hang out with us, you know, like we're all gamers. We all love fighting games. You know, we love the intricacies of it, you know, and then from there, you know, you just make friendships. Like there's a lot of people that just met, you know, it's kind of like a club, like, you know, like friendship club is like. Soft as that sounds, but so, you know, sorry, like
you're kind of getting exposed right now, brother.
Like, you know, like fighting games sounds like it's like this real like rough thing, but right at the end of the day, you know, what we want to do is just come hang out, you know, talk some shit, you know, just like, you know, discuss things. There are a lot of intelligent people within the community, you know, they have highly intellectual conversations, and then they come and talk to me and have lowbrow conversations, you know, probably lowest common denominator conversations. But that's the goal, is just to pull the online audience offline and then get them to understand, like, man, this is actually real cool. It's like way cooler than online.
It's kind of breaking that boundary down, right? So
yeah,
you book a kind of things. All right, the brother Todd from Tasman up the Marcos, he reckons.
Yeah.
What's the go-to order at the fish and chip shop, bro?
Oh, bro, this is hard, but
should we save this, bro? We'll save it to the end, eh?
Yeah.
So you can have a think about it. Yeah, come on, Todd.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
All right. Next one is there any way for community-driven events and TOs to reconcile with orgs coming into the scene and trying to push their ideals and their rules into the community?
Definitely. There is a way to do that. Like, I would be ignorant to say, like, just to give a flat no, because then that would be my bias being detrimental to a community, you know. So I'm not the community. Everybody's the community. So So what I say or think is generally not always going to be what's best for the community. And when it gets to that point, then I'll know where I'm going wrong. So obviously, if there are any orgs and stuff, you know, coming in like that do, you know, have like pathways for us to, you know, like, because there is a way for it to work, and there has to be a way for it to work, because at the end of the day, there needs to be a pathway. And if the people that have the keys to the pathway can connect with a grassroots community, then the outcome is pretty much the win-win scenario that everybody wants.
Yeah. And yeah, you're right, man. Like, We all want to win, like, you know, everybody kind of wants that. Okay. Next one. You have worked with a lot of organizations and community groups throughout your time. What is the most surprising group of people who have asked for your help to work with?
Well, there are two. I've got two that's always buzzed me out. One was I got invited to be on a NetSafe panel regarding esports.
Yo,
which I. Yeah, well, I don't know. I just felt like that was a bit like, I don't know what input I could have on NetSafe and
eSports stuff. That's just you, bro. Stop being so humble, G. this is what you can learn from me, Dave. Nah,
what are you doing?
Look at me right now, bro. Versace suits, bitch. Fucking Gucci glasses right here. Okay, you see me? Look at me shine, Dave. Okay.
Yeah, so there's that. And then another one was I got asked to help organize a gaming event for a girls group, a girls like a social group out in Pam Yor. So it's called the Phenomenal Young Women's Group, and it's a safe space for young women who have troubled growing up, you know, like either through addiction, abuse, like, you know, all the social ills. And they asked me to set up a like a little gaming space for them. I kind of felt bad because like it's a girls group, and I figured like it would be better if like so I had T-Mod come in one day, just, you know, like I feel like the girls would be better to connect with other girls, like women kind of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, like listen, look at the amazing people you have in your community to draw on, that like want to encourage more girls to play and get. Yeah. You got Shamir, there's Milky, there's T-Mod, you got so many of these people. And like I mentioned it on Drex. Did you listen to the Drex podcast, bro?
No, I haven't had a chance to.
I don't want to support. All good. Up your ass. Anyway.
Hey, ones, man.
No. Sweet ass. Yeah, I understand. What I was saying, now I've lost my train of thought. I know where I'm going. So what I said to him was the one thing that really fucking buzzed me out, bro, legit, was the amount of different people you had at the event. And I mentioned, and I don't even know who this woman is, okay, but she was like a Russian or like Ukrainian or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I said to you, and I honestly thought, I was like, oh, she must be here to, I don't know, like just watching and shit. And like she was like speaking fucking like Russian or some shit, and I was like, damn, like okay. And then she looked like my kid's teacher, like she looked, she was dressed, all that shit. And then she straight murked Wolf at fucking at Tekken, yo. And I was looking at Wolf like shame. My teacher, you know what I'm saying? Like you have all of these really cool connections to get in there and man, that's, bro, see, stop being humble, G. Fuck.
I don't know. It's hard, you know, like it's hard to, like, I think it's still hard for me to connect that because I still feel like there's still a lot more that I can do that, you know, I haven't actually earned that right to be like that yet, you know, like there's still a lot of things that I want to do.
Work in progress, is that it?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's it. All right, bro. So fighting games as a whole, bro, how are they, like, do you feel that fighting games are evolving? Do you think that, you know, like netcode is getting better? Where do you think fighting games are going now?
It's a weird space at the moment because fighting games are kind of being dumbed down execution-wise. So, like, moves are a bit easier to input. With Dragon Ball FighterZ being one of the games where you don't really need a lot of intricate moves. Like, you know, there are still hard combos and hard techniques, but you, at the end of the day, you can just mash square and you'll get, you know, like a sticker is like 20 hit combo with, you know, compared to someone doing everything to get the same amount of damage, same amount of hits. Then it's that. And then there's the rollback versus delay based net code. So
we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
So, did you listen to the podcast yesterday? No. Yeah. I bet you didn't, eh? Far, bro, no support. All good.
I heard it with Punisher. I was listening with Punisher. Okay, so pretty much like what he covered in the anime games, like I know he was talking about Granblue, which is a game, I feel like is a step in the right direction with the way that the rest, like Granblue and I would say the Power Rangers fighting game are two games I think are going in the right direction for fighting games, where they've kept the deepness of the game without sacrificing they've made the entry level easier without sacrificing the deepness of the game.
Yeah, because I think, like, well, from a developer's standpoint, right, you want as many people to not feel isolated because they're not good.
Yeah.
You know? I think, like, Killer Instinct is a good, like kind of example of that where, well, not a good example, a bad one, because they just made everything super easy to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the Killer Instinct went too far.
Yeah.
Like the once they introduced the easy mode combo breakers, that kind of but then even then that turned into like a mind game in itself, but there was still the opportunity for someone to mash out a combo breaker, you know, like against someone really, really good.
Yeah. Because I think it was really interesting for me to be at Southern Showdown and Southern Cross Up and watch like games like Sam Show and like Soul Calibur, games that like aren't really that mainstream, but to see there's a following behind it, you know?
Yep.
Even Mortal Kombat, like it was cool to watch, like, because, you know, growing up Mortal Kombat was the thing. Like everybody played MK2 and MK3, you know, like, and then to see it still kind of existing from like the outside looking in was pretty cool. But do you think that, you know, moving forwards with the main IPs, where do you think they're going to go with that shit? They're just going to fucking rinse and repeat and try different things and add a couple of different, like, let's say, like, Street Fighter 6 and, like, whenever that may come out. Like, what do you reckon might be the next kind of, where do you think they're going to go?
What I'm thinking is they'll probably, well, it depends also on what Riot brings out with their fighting game.
Why is that going to be huge?
It's just because if they base it on what I think they're going to base it on. So there was a game that came out, I think about 2013, 2014, called Rising Thunder, which was a fighting game that used, so there were no special inputs. There were buttons. So it's kind of like League, you know, you had your spell buttons. So that was your specials. And then each special had a cooldown. So then all you would do is just, you know, you would go medium, heavy punch, press your special button. And then that immediately, because some people can't do a dragon punch or a quarter circle forward, you know? So then as soon as you take that out, so Riot bought the developer, or bought the studio that, you know, made that game. And then everyone is assuming that that's the framework that they're going to use, because Tom Cannon, who was one of the co-founders of Evo, who was part of creating that game, he has been working with Riot as well. So if that comes out and the amount of people who just love anything League orientated are going to jump on, and you'd be surprised at how many fighting game players, not just in New Zealand, but worldwide, play League on the side.
Yeah. Or, you know, so, Team Fortress. And
yeah. TFT, yeah. TFT. Yeah. So you combine all of that together, you know, the player base will be crazy. It'll be insane. Only if they can pull that game off, right? But if not, Street Fighter 6, the thing with Street Fighter, though, is that it's been the same formula since Street Fighter 2, you know? New character, special moves, that's always a given. And then the games are always broken down by the game mechanics. And I think if they were smart, they'll pick some parts from Street Fighter 3 and some from Street Fighter 4.
Yeah. Why did everybody not trash on Street Fighter 5? I mean, why did it not get like the praise that 4 got?
It's one of those things where Street Fighter 4 was a lot of people's first fighting game. You know, it's like that. It's your first. You know, like everyone remembers their first driving game, their first RPG game, their first shooter. You know, and Street Fighter 4 was the first fighting game for them. So,
that was, like, not my first fighting game, but that was my first time I went online with a fighting game, and that was the first time I was like, I want to get really good at this game.
Like, serious. And, yeah.
Like, I was online. I was checking, like, all these other ones. Shout-outs to Blanca, my G. Let's go. Fuck, Drax called it character specialist or some shit like that.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, bro. I didn't know there was a name for this shit.
Yeah,
I just think that he's electric and he's cool.
Nah, there's terms of everything, bro. Character specialist, you stick to your only character.
reputable journalist is also something that
I'll hit you with the 5 stars after the say on the review.
On my Uber review. On my Uber, can you help review me, G?
All right, you do the 5 stars, definite professional.
But I think that was my first real taste, and then after that, bro, I just was hooked. I think, and it's cool to see other things getting kind of some shine, like Sam's Show. I've never watched Sam's Show in my life. Like I remember playing like the OG one on the arcades, I didn't even know about. And then, you know, there's old Mia going, "Oh, hard out, oh, Sam's Show there, Sam's Show." And then I watch her play, and I'm like, "Fuck, this is actually like, it's different, right? It's like a slowed down version of shit."
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot more slow paced. It's not about the combos in that game. That game is more about your spacing, so where you place your characters, and then your whiff punishing. So whiff punishing is when your opponent puts a really slow move out, and then in the recovery when they're pulling their arm back, you hit them. So like that's a real big one. But that can even fall under a read. You know, like if you play someone and you say, oh, their favorite button to press is medium punch, you know, or they have, without them knowing it, they'll have a pattern, you know, oh, he dashes back twice and then he'll jump, so I'm going to anti-air, and you get it every time. You know, the other person's not going to understand how you're getting it, but yeah, that's because Samurai Showdown's real slow pace. You know, you got to control the space, you can't be too aggressive. You have to really pick your spots. Shamir is definitely, her and Moose are definitely two people. If anyone in the chat wants to learn Samurai Showdown, bro, hit those two up. Yep.
Yeah, I got to get Shamir on here, but she's too busy for me. She's a busy lady. Yeah. Like, can't, like,
right, she's on
with you, I could just hit up, like, hey, bro, you can. That one, nah, bro.
You got to speak to her receptionist and then...
Make a time.
That's not cool, man. The team manager and all that, you know.
That social distancing that we were talking about earlier, you know. All right, bro. So, like, why is Tekken so big now? What do you reckon? In the New Zealand community, it's like massive.
It just comes down to ease of access, really. You know, like, it falls under the game. It's a game where you can do a combo real easy, like, you know, like Street Fighter, you can't mash square and get a 3-hit combo and knock someone down, you know, whereas in Tekken you can mash square and triangle and you get a cool looking combo. You don't know how you did it, but it looks cool. You go in Street Fighter, you mash square and triangle, your guy's just gonna stand there, the guy's just gonna stand there and go punch, 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 punch. And then whereas in Tekken, you're mashing forward, square triangle, oh, mean combo, oh, mean, the uppercut just came out of nowhere, don't know how I did it. So, like, that, like, for the lower level players, that is the biggest reason. For the higher level players, a lot of them are legacy players. So they, you know, they come from the Tekken 5, Tekken 6, Tekken Tag 1 and 2 era, you know. So for them, it's just like a Street Fighter player, you know. You go Street Fighter 2, 3, 4, 5. It's just that thing. But with, like, Tekken 7 being so easy for new players to come in, you have a lot of younger players coming through. You know, they'll go through the button mashing phase, and then once they get through that, they'll be like, why does this guy keep beating me? And a lot of them will just go on Facebook, you know, to the Tekken group or YouTube, look up, you know, I'm a King combo. Oh, this is cool. And then, you know, eventually, oh, there's a New Zealand guy who plays that, you know, oh, let's see what he does. You know, it's just like all these like little steps. But I think it's just the barrier to entry is so low that I think that's why Tekken is so popular.
All right, bro. I'm going to add the spice now. We're going to get into these spicy questions, brother.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you need the Federation, bro? Do you need the NZ ESF? Do you need them, bro, to grow? Like, honestly.
To be honest?
Yeah.
Not really, yeah.
Yeah?
For the last, you know, 8 years that I've been doing it, I've been able to do it on my own. The only thing that I do need help with is getting a connection to, you know, the like the like companies or sponsors, which I feel like to have a nationally recognized group just for that, I think it's a kind of a waste. Like, I feel like maybe it could have gone in a different direction. Like, you know, video games are a form of entertainment. Why couldn't we fall under, you know, why couldn't, like, I think that would be a better avenue to head.
So, like, let's say, like, they came, let's say they hit you up, bro, and they were like, other than money, like, other than giving you $1,000 or $1 million or whatever, other than that, what can we do to help, bro? Can you name me three things, bro, that they could give you to help you in terms of growth and in terms of esport wise supporting you?
Yeah. So the number one, the biggest one, bro, would be a venue. If they can give me a venue that can host between, you know, like 200, 300, up to 500 people with fast internet, proper power, proper space that can fit players and spectators, then that's biggest number one.
That's number the biggest two, number one.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's a need for all esports in New Zealand is a venue. Like if they can do that, then that's a good thing. Number two would be showing pathways for community groups to get funding, you know, where to apply to, who are they supposed to talk to, what are the groups that they're supposed to lobby to, you know. Without them needing a technical lawyer or nothing, because a lot of these community groups, you know, nobody is thinking about this. Like, nobody's thinking about this. Like, oh, if I do this and this, you know, like hypothetically, you know, if I do this and this, I get X amount of stock, which I can use to, you know, leverage myself into whatever other position I want to get into.
Yeah,
you know, like which is fine if that's how someone wants to do it. Yeah, that's cool. But I think using a whole community as a stepping stone for something like that, I don't think that's the right way to go about it.
Yeah. And another thing, anything else?
And then the third thing would be, what was it? So it was venue, pathways, and thing. And then the third thing would be, if they do want to like be in charge, like, you know, in charge. Having like a strong set of rules, which don't like having a strong set of rules which change with the flow of the scene, you know, one set of rules isn't going to work. You know, obviously they would know that if they're, you know, controlling different, you know, it's just like different sports codes, you know. So if they have a strong charter for each individual ruling list that just, you know, like Joe Blog can just be like, oh, my son wants to enter Street Fighter and he wants to play Fortnite and he wants to play FIFA 90, whatever, you know, FIFA 2020. Well, where can I find the rules for an online tournament, you know?
And just like that is episode one of the interview podcast that I had with Dave from Standing Fierce. Great dude. Anyway, because I had to cut it into two because the bro spits mad knowledge. Next podcast. Thanks to everybody for tuning on in. Also, thanks to the Patreon people. If you want to help out, patreon.com/theprovisproject. And I will see you for episode two next week. All right. Thanks, guys. Peace.